Hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of Reed's Wrestling. I'm your host, Alan Reed, and today I'll be reviewing the February 20th edition of Raw. Before I get to my review, I want to quickly talk about the Elimination Chamber and what happened, and it's still a pretty big topic in the world of wrestling right now. So first off, I wanted to start by talking a bit about it, and I think it actually was one of the most entertaining and pumped up pay-per-views of the year so far, or maybe in the past 2 years. The crowd was extremely alive and probably one of the best crowds I've ever seen in a long time. Watching it from my TV, I can feel the energy. I can feel them shouting. The Montreal crowd was just amazing. And I honestly wish I was there in person, because I think I would have lost my voice with how incredible the energy was, the atmosphere was. Obviously, the main topic of Elimination Chamber was Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn, and they stole the show, or in other words, the pay-per-view was really revolved around them. The match itself was outstanding. The back and forth, the false finishes, you had hope where Sami might have actually been the one to end Roman Reigns' 900-day record-breaking championship run, or you had Roman Reigns where he just couldn't put Sami Zayn down and you were all in for it. And there was time where I honestly thought that Sami Zayn was going to be the one, because they just gave us so much hope in that match. The pop from the crowd was amazing every single time. Sami was just 2 seconds away from finishing the match. And I think this match proved to the entire world, to maybe people that doubted Sami Zayn, that Sami Zayn could definitely hang with the top dogs. He could hang with the Cody Rhodes, with the Roman Reigns, with the Seth Rollins, with whatever else, whoever else they want to put in the main event. But Sami Zayn really has come a long way. I remember watching him at NXT and then coming to the main roster and just thinking, I don't really think he's gonna really go anywhere and just be the mid-card guy and probably win a tag team championship or Intercontinental. But no, here we are, and he went against Roman Reigns and honestly put on a great show, great performance. His body showed how much he wanted that moment, because he was very scarred and those lashes in his back were pretty gruesome. Another highlight for Elimination Chamber was the Men's Elimination Chamber, where it was my second favorite match of the night. I think all six men looked like superstars, performed as superstars. They all had their own great spots in the match. Obviously, Montez Ford being probably the MVP of the match, where he just jumped around everywhere. He was able to show off his athleticism and just bounce around the ring. And he climbed up the cell and just let himself drop from the roof of the cell or the chamber to all his opponents. I think Montez is on the right path to being a singles competitor. Street Profits, I think their days are numbered as a tag team. Not to take anything around from Dawson, I think he's a great competitor too, but obviously all eyes are on Montez Ford, and there is something there with Montez. Not right now, but give it a few years. If they build him up to be this new main eventer that they want to make him, he could easily become a world champion sooner or later. But yes, those are my quick reviews of the Elimination Chamber from this year. Now, we're going to move on to my Raw review. The night started off with Sami Zayn. He came out, and again, he coming off his great performance. There's no telling where he's going to go now. Well, I mean, there is the best obvious choice, which is him teaming up with Kevin Owens and them taking on the Usos at WrestleMania for the tag team championship, which are the rumors, and it looks like that's the direction they are gonna go. And Sami Zayn stood tall in the ring, and he got another standing ovation from his home country of Canada. Again, huge pop for Sami. Sami Zayn is extremely over right now with WWE fans. I mean, I wouldn't even say even if he comes back to the States right now next week, he is still gonna be extremely over, and people are just gonna scream his name. For all we know, with him not being able to defeat Roman Reigns, he could slither his way into the main event of WrestleMania, where it can turn into a triple threat match. So it would be Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes versus Sami Zayn. Would it be a good idea? who knows? It's really 50-50. I think it will really divide the WWE fans in the sense of maybe Cody fans will feel like Cody's big moment in return is in jeopardy because now, just because Sami Zayn got a huge pop and he's probably maybe more over than Cody, if they don't want to admit it, since Sami's more over, they just want to put him there, kind of make it a bigger WrestleMania main event than it is. Either way, I don't really think Roman Reigns is going to walk out of WrestleMania with holding any belt, honestly. But that is for a different day and a different topic. When it happens, or we get closer to it. I'm actually surprised that Sami Zayn even came out on Raw, because I thought they were going to milk this big praise of Sami, kind of milk it a whole week till Friday Night SmackDown, where he will come out and talk more about what happened and what he's going to be next. So I was I was surprised, but I'm obviously excited to see Sami come to Raw and have one last ovation in his native of Canada. During his promo, he spoke mostly about feeling guilty and letting his country down, letting his fans down, and his family down, and that he didn't win the championship. But he did say that, you know, there is a final chapter in the story, and we're basically living it right now. That's when Kevin Owens comes out to join his friend, best friend. While Sami spoke to Kevin about the bloodline, Sami basically teased the formation of their tag team again, which by far is obviously been the rumor, and the rumors so far are coming true. He told Kevin Owens that he can't do it alone, and that Sami couldn't do it alone either, so why not just team up and take out the bloodline, even if it means taking out the Usos first. They have to work together to take out the bloodline. I think this is great. It makes the bloodline almost seem like a myth, a legend, that they're the Loch Ness monster of WWE, almost like gods, like nothing can ever beat these people. Maybe Sami and Kevin are the catalyst for it. They will be the ones to open the door to the fall of the bloodline. Honestly, I welcome that idea, Kevin and Sami, to kind of start the engine of the bloodline's demise, if so be it. Kevin at first seemed reluctant. He's always been a one-man band type of guy. You know, it's his way or no way, or if he can't get shit done himself, he will find a way to get it done. Kevin then told Sami Zayn that he needed to beat the bloodline to find hit. If he needed to beat the bloodline, to just go find his buddy Jey Uso, which that was a pretty bold statement and got a pop from the crowd. And it's almost seems kind of as if, let's say, Kevin is maybe jealous in a sense of, why didn't Sami come to me first if he really needed help, and instead he just chose Jey, this guy he's just known for a few months, over the person that he started wrestling with years ago, decades ago. I think Kevin is a little hurt and jealous a little bit. It's gonna take a while for Sami to convince Kevin Owens to join him to take out the bloodline or the Usos, and it will happen eventually, we know. I think I'm calling it maybe around mid-March, or even right now the end of February is when they're gonna really show Kevin Owens getting convinced, and I think that's the perfect way to go. It's gonna pace the story even better. We don't have to make it too long, but we don't have to make it too short. I think this story with Kevin and Sami has to reach WrestleMania. It can go way before, but it could go after WrestleMania, but they can't really do it right now. I think right now they have to kind of do a little subplot of trying to convince Kevin, and then from there Kevin gets convinced, boom, we're hightailing it towards WrestleMania. If they were just to join forces right now, last night at Raw, it would have just felt like, you know, they rushed it, and by the time we're getting close to WrestleMania, basically we've seen maybe everything that both teams can do to each other before a big match. So they might have run out of ideas, or the ideas might be a little too boring, maybe too repetitive. Maybe, who knows? Maybe if they were just to do it last night, they could just make something up right now and boom, it would have been gold. But I'm glad that they're not rushing Kevin's decision. It's gonna take a while, but it is great pacing, and I'm honestly excited to see what would happen when Kevin and Sami Zayn team up to take on, the Usos at WrestleMania. Then as Sami Zayn was exiting the ring, Baron Corbin came out of nowhere and attacked Sami from behind. I think it was just, okay, he just needs some TV time, so why not just give it to him? Baron Corbin, you know, I feel like he's really yet to break out. He's had all these character changes, and honestly, I give him all the credit to the world. Whatever he's given, he does it 110%. He gives it all his all. He tries to just make it get over. They haven't given him the best ideas yet, minus the hobo Baron Corbin, the homeless Baron Corbin, where I think that really was his best work, and I think they should have just kept that one going for a lot longer than just cutting in, just turning him into this rich, ambitious Baron Corbin that they have. But there's just something about Baron Corbin's characters that sometimes just don't click. Something's just not right, you know? And it's not even his fault, honestly, because like I said, he does give 110% to his character. But it's just something that I don't really see that just gives that oomph feeling. So that leads us into a Sami Zayn versus Baron Corbin match. And I honestly thought this was a really random match. Almost felt like a squash match for Baron Corbin because obviously the crowd was with Sami. I was honestly more focused on the battle scars on Sami Zayn's body because he had some crazy lacerations on his back and one huge laceration on across his chest and his stomach. Honestly, I think Sami Zayn was in quite the pain during this match. The way he kind of did his moves and the maneuvers he did, it kind of felt like he was holding in the pain, but the man kept going, and it's pure adrenaline, and the guy's on fire, and I was like, he can't even let this minor injury maybe to him to just slow him down. Sami Zayn did get the win. Again, the match itself wasn't entertaining and all at least, but I don't really think it was supposed to be entertaining. I think it was just, they were just going to give him one last match in Canada and kind of have his goodbyes, because God knows when they'll go back to Canada. Then we move on to Rhea Ripley's interview. Rhea Ripley, she's been on a hell of a roll with Judgment Day. She's going to WrestleMania. I think it's her time to be champion. She deserves to be the women's champion. I hope they do not let Charlotte go over at WrestleMania. That would just destroy her momentum. She has to get her chance to be on top of the women's division. Whether it be right now or after WrestleMania, she needs to be on top of the world right now. I could see Rhea becoming women's champion, just tearing up every single woman in both locker room, really, in Raw and SmackDown. And not to mention, Judgment Day could honestly use some sort of championship, because they're dominant. They're not one of the best tag teams or factions in WWE today, but they are. There's nothing to mess with, but they don't really have anything to show for. They don't have any championship history together, unless you just separate it by wrestler. So it would be nice. It would be nice if they kind of show that Judgment Day can win championships. Also, while the interview was happening, I had this thought in my head where, okay, Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair did have a match at WrestleMania 2020 during the pandemic, and Charlotte ended up winning. But wouldn't it be cool, or maybe a little bit narcissistic, maybe if they were to kind of, well, one of them, maybe most likely Charlotte, I would say, would be the one to kind of show a replay of their match from 2020 at WrestleMania and kind of go the route where, okay, Rhea was a rookie at that time to the main roster, and she couldn't stand to go against Charlotte Flair. But now Rhea has gained enough experience where she's fully confident that she can defeat Charlotte, And Charlotte, you know, she can use it against her, and seemingly kind of looks, will look like she could bring Rhea Ripley's confidence down, seemingly. So, which I would say in front of Judgment Day, Rhea will be confident, but behind the scenes, we will see more emotions in her bring out, and we will see more of doubt in her, a little slight of doubt in her mind, where can she beat Charlotte at WrestleMania, or can she not beat Charlotte at WrestleMania? Then we move on to Dolph Ziggler versus Mustafa Ali. These are the two wrestlers I call that have just fallen from grace. Both are extremely talented, so talented, so much to give, so much potential there, but they just never break through. Mustafa Ali is just, it's one of those what-if stories, I swear, at this point. It just seems like when he's about to get a push, a really big push, it's just something just gets in the way, and just something just basically says, all right, thank you, next. And it sucks, because you look at Mustafa Ali, even though he's not a big guy or anything like that, there is something there where I just don't know what they don't see in Mustafa Ali. Dolph Ziggler, on the other hand, I mean, he's the best seller in WWE. You do your finisher on Dolph Ziggler will make you look like $1 million. He knows how to maneuver his body when it comes to doing a finisher, and he makes it seem like Zeus or someone just hit him in the face and flipped him over. As for the match itself, Dolph Ziggler versus Mustafa Ali, it was short and bland, and Mustafa Ali just did a roll up and he got the win, to his surprise apparently, because he was quite stunned at winning the match. I think Dolph kind of had that face of, hey man, here you go kid, you're welcome, type of feel. I kind of feel like Dolph at this point he's in a career, even though he hasn't been WWE champion a while, he's more about putting younger talent over, even though I think Mustafa Ali is almost as old as Dolph Ziggler. I could be wrong, I'm not sure, you can fact check that, but it was more about getting Mustafa Ali over, because when was the last time Mustafa Ali really won a match clean? Then we move on to Cody Rhodes promo. Cody Rhodes, he came to the ring, he grabbed his mic just when he was about to speak. Paul Heyman just quickly interrupted Cody before he can even speak. Paul Heyman's fashion choice was funny, just him wearing a neck brace in his suit. Something about it just kind of made comedy out of it without even trying to be. Seeing Paul Heyman acting like he's hurt is just hilarious. And we all know that this guy barely gets hurt, so we know he's wearing it because we're supposed to feel sorry for him for everything he's literally done. But yeah, I don't think we feel sorry for him. Cody is a interesting vessel right now, because he's basically getting the superstar treatment. He comes back as number 30 in Royal Rumble, wins the Royal Rumble, now he's going to WrestleMania. Cody could go a lot of directions during this storyline. I mean, he could get into Roman Reigns' head by telling him how he almost lost to, you know, I guess Cody could kind of bring in Sami Zayn, in a sense of kind of bringing Sami Zayn's name down, and say like, hey, you almost lost to someone who hasn't even seen a main event before, a person that has never sold out an arena. You know, Cody's not much of playing mind games, but he can kind of add it to this and kind of add more of a substance to it, you know, a little more edge to it, as you could say. I was also, during this whole promo, I was thinking of, I don't know, of a twist. Like, what if this whole time Paul Heyman's actually been the one calling the shots? You know, we thought it was Roman Reigns calling the shots, and Paul Heyman was just following suit because Paul Heyman just wants to go with the next top guy. Everything that's happened to Cody is because of Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman brought him back. Paul Heyman, you know, made sure that Cody would get injured and lose a year of wrestling just so Roman can, you know, gain the confidence or whatever. You know, he played the Usos into, let's say, if they were to lose the tag team titles one day, and now Roman will lose the Universal Championships. It will leave the question like, do you really trust Paul Heyman? So, in reality, let's say this whole twist happens. Could we trust Paul Heyman? No, obviously. But I think it will make Paul Heyman the most hated, conniving guy in wrestling history. Probably a way better heel manager than anyone we've ever seen. Like Paul, if they were to do something like that, Paul Heyman would be the most disgraced man in WWE, and I think he would like that. There's also been quite the rumors, well, few rumors from not really much reliable sources, but Dustin Rhodes is supposed to make maybe an appearance in WWE for his brother Cody. I think it would be a great touching moment to see, you know, brothers in the ring. Maybe it could happen at WrestleMania. Dustin comes in, interferes, helps Cody win the championship, and they share a great moment in the middle of the ring at WrestleMania for their father, Dustin Rhodes. It's a long shot to see Dustin come back because I do believe he is still under contract with AEW, or just WWE doesn't really want to make business with anyone involved in there. It's a long shot, like I said, but it would be nice to see a little family reunion with Dustin and Cody. This is what I like about Paul Heyman's promos. Whether they're too long, too short, they just get straight to the point week after week after week. He doesn't repeat himself. He doesn't say something he said last week unless it has something to do with what he's going to say right now. He finds a way to second guess yourself. As when he talks to you, you might second guess yourself because he strikes at the core. He tries to find those niches where he pinches your nerves and you react to it in that moment. So I've always said Paul Heyman, best shit talker in WWE, honestly. So then Cody refers to that he has to finish the story, which I think obviously he was referring to Sammy saying that there's the final chapter. Makes sense, but again, was that a teaser of a triple threat match with two people talking about finishing the story? I don't know how they would even do it without making it seem like they're trying to take some sort of spotlight from Cody, but we will honestly wait and see how they go. Cody's promo last night was pretty straight to the point, just coming out and saying that he's going to beat Roman at WrestleMania. You know, the confidence is there. I just hope they kind of pull through with what we've been reading about, make Cody champion, or just take the belt off Roman Reigns in general. There needs to be a fresh new face behind the Universal Championship, the Undisputed Universal. 905 days now or whatever for Roman Reigns. I mean, you can only go so far. Unless WWE or Triple H is going to be bold enough to honestly make it to 1,000 days as champion, which is ambitious as fuck. I don't think that they will do that. If they do, I wouldn't be surprised. Just knowing how Triple H kind of likes to, how can I put it, he likes to get reactions out of people in whatever way he can, whether it's booking decisions, interviews, segments, whatever. He wants to get a reaction out of you. But the reaction that he is gonna get if it does lead to 1,000 days, because that's 100 days from now, so that means Roman will retain at WrestleMania per se, I think people will honestly start getting tired, and all this work that they've done to actually build Roman Reigns into what he is right now is just gonna backfire, as when they first tried to make Roman Reigns as a babyface and he was just unloved by anyone or any one of us because it was just boring and stuff. I don't know what else they might do with this, but it's all in all, it's interesting storytelling, long-term story, which is something I miss. And though there was just long-term storytelling with point A, B, C, D, and then you keep going, but in every single point that has to advance the story, they've been able to come up with something. Obviously, we've had some repeated things with, obviously, Roman has won like almost every single match with the interference of the Usos and Paul Heyman, even my dad, he used to watch WWE back in Attitude Era, but now he's kind of in and out. He's seen possibly around seven Roman Reigns main events, and he basically predicts them all on the spot, because obviously we know that Usos are going to interfere and blah blah blah. It is what it is, but we will see how it goes. Then we move on to Asuka versus Nikki Cross. I'll forever say this, I might be in the very, very, very small portion of WWE fans where I say I'm so glad that they just get rid of this whole Nikki ASH superhero gimmick. I honestly thought it was plain stupid. It was one of those wacky Vince McMahon ideas that I was like, nah, this is not going to work. And honestly, for me, it didn't work. I thought the whole crazy, psychotic Nikki Cross gimmick was 10 times better than this. So happy they got rid of it. Asuka's new, like, kind of character is one I don't know much about, because I've always forget to do my research on it for some apparent reason. I hear nothing but great stories about Asuka's kind of character from, like, New Japan wrestling, but I don't know if Triple H brought it back in the sense of, like, just to kind of make Asuka happy. It's like, hey, I kind of want to do this, or is it just kind of like an essence of the character? You know, I don't think he hasn't really brought out the essence of what kind of is, which I'm gonna look over and see if I can understand the kind of character more, and see like what's the difference with like Asuka's Kana and like Asuka, like the WWE Asuka that we've known for a while. And during the match, Bianca was out here obviously observing her competition for WrestleMania. I started to wonder as the match progressed, because the match wasn't really much to it. It was Nikki Cross really actually had more of the fight than Asuka. I was just wondering, you know, when is Asuka going to be champion again? I think it's been a while. I mean, obviously she's been injured and just came back, but, you know, it's been a while now. She just, you know, came back at Royal Rumble, but I think she's one hell of a woman's champion. And I'm calling it that by SummerSlam, she's going to have a championship run. Maybe even at SummerSlam. As for the match, Asuka, she did a DDT Radiation off the top rope, and then she gave Nikki Cross the Asuka lock, and Asuka got the win. And after the match, though, it was very interesting that Bianca and Asuka, you know, they stood there just looking at the WrestleMania signs, and then Asuka, you know, just starts like vomiting like the blue liquid from her mouth, and you can see that Asuka was kind of like, oh shit, okay, what the fuck did I get myself into now with this chick? So it was a cool little thing that they were able to do to kind of make it seem like, okay, like both of them respect each other, but hey, look out for this chick. This chick might just about to do anything to win that match. Then we move on to The Miz versus Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins he's on fire in the match. I guess after the little surprise appearance by Logan Paul at Elimination Chamber, which cost him the United States title, I think it's still kind of in his mind, so he needed to go out there and really show Logan why they call him the architect. Obviously we're gonna get Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul at WrestleMania. It's gonna be that celebrity appearance at WrestleMania. I honestly think Logan Paul is one of the most athletic and talented celebrity guests we've had in a while. Honestly, I think next to Bad Bunny, I think Logan Paul is actually fired up, and he does way more than what other celebrities have done. But with this story going, and since Logan Paul is a social media star, why not kind of make Seth Rollins into a social media star, in a sense of like he should be using social media to further this feud more, like a daily or even weekly he posts a video or a tweet or a picture or like a Photoshop picture or something of like just destroying Logan Paul, and then Logan Paul kind of doing the same, and you know, making him seem more believable that they don't like each other. Even then, I think it will bring more heat to Seth Rollins, because let's say there's a percentage of Logan Paul's fans that maybe don't watch wrestling, don't know anything about wrestling, so they see Logan Paul just posting this guy, talking about a guy, they're gonna be like, okay, who is this guy? Like, why is he talking shit about, like, this guy I'm following, which is Logan Paul? I think it'll be a cool dynamic. It'll be, you know, use your resources. It will further stuff, though. This is where social media would be good for business. It will seem more believable for the people that don't watch the product, and then as for people that do watch the product, the fans, we can see Seth kind of go into this mental state where you know, he gets really involved in social media, and it's kind of like, whoa, you know, calm down. I don't know, it's just a quick idea. As for the match with Miz versus Seth, the Miz, he had the upper hand in the middle of the match. It looked like he had the match on lockdown, but Seth Rollins outsmarted him. Seth, he gave The Miz 3 curb stomps. The ref stopped the match, and Seth got the win. I think he just knocked out The Miz. The look on Seth's face, like I said, it says like he wanted to prove something. He's pissed off about what happened. He could have been U.S. champion right there, but there's determination on him. The match itself with The Miz and Seth Rollins, it was okay. Again, a lot of the matches so far, they haven't been up to par, but yet they weren't boring. It had that middle ground where the matches so far during the night weren't too long, but they weren't too short. They were just the right amount, so we could kind of keep the ball rolling for the night. Then we have the Ding Dong Hello segment with Bayley and Damage Control. I love this segment because I love Bayley. I love what she's become. She's a great heel, and I low-key find Bayley to be somehow funny without trying. She's just the right amount. As for the segment, Bayley, you know, she praised her friends, and they've apparently been dominating the women's tag team division for 100 days and will keep doing so. Rightfully so, they have been dominating because Damage Control hasn't fucking defended the title in a fucking while. Becky Lynch comes out to interrupt, and Becky's basically says what I said. I was like, okay, those belts, they haven't been defended in forever, so obviously it's gonna look like you're on top of the world and you're dominating the women's division when you're wrestling every other day. So Becky needed someone to help her out, and in comes Lita to the surprise of Damage Control, and Damage Control did look more worried, and they look like they've basically seen a ghost. Like, what the fuck is she even doing? They probably thought it was just a one-time thing. Lita came out, she said that she likes the idea of having another title reign and wants to walk into WrestleMania as a champion. Okay. This is where it gets interesting, because is she teasing a return to the ring, maybe being a part-timer, you know, doing one or two storylines, then that's it. I don't know, I think maybe it might just be a WrestleMania thing, like a WrestleMania appearance. I just love during the segment how Becky and Lita, they were just strutting down to the ring, and just to see Bayley scream out that you better use the door if you're gonna come into my segment, which I don't know, just very low-key funny delivery, like I said, just low-key. So with Lita teasing maybe a return or being a part-timer, I mean, there's still rumors that Trish Stratus is supposed to join into this feud. I thought she would have come out last night because they are still in Canada and she lives right there. I guess they were waiting for the right time, and it turns out that this morning I found out that Trish Stratus was actually in the arena in Ottawa, Canada, and she was backstage and she was ready to go out, but there was a last minute creative change, and that's why she didn't come out. They completely changed the story. Apparently it's something that Trish has been wanting to do for some time now, and I'm intrigued by that to know what it is and what it will be. if it's something she's been wanting to do for a long time, I mean, maybe it could be being at a women's tag team champion, because there wasn't really there really wasn't a women's tag team championship when she was in WWE. I just thought it would be cool. Maybe it's something she wanted to do for a long time. I just thought it would be cool. What if Trish and Lita just reignite their feud, you know, during this storyline, you know? Like, they kind of start to see how they start to remember why they just don't like each other and why they shouldn't be a tag team and have, like, one last hurrah before they officially, you know, don't do it anymore. It would be not, you know, nostalgic, and there, you know, there wouldn't be really much to, like, odds in a sense of championship. I just think it would be bragging rights that, hey, you know, in your retirement match, you beat me, so I have to beat you, because Trish beat Lita in her final match in 2006, 7, I think it was, or 8, it was around there. Or 2008, I think it was, yes. So, yeah, I hope and pray maybe we can see Trish and Lita. 3. Then we move on to Chad Gable versus Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed is this guy that I can't even describe him, because there's just no character development. I think Triple H he's trying hard to get Bronson over somehow. A lot of fans are just not interested in Bronson. I'm not that interested in Bronson. Even when he was in NXT, he's a big guy. Like, he's a truck. Like, he'll whoop your ass and whatever. It's just, character-wise, he has no character. He's just a big guy that just can just tear you apart. You know, Triple H brought him back, and I guess it was supposed to be this big surprise return. But in reality, it was probably the most boring comeback in a while. With everyone, at least in the time with everyone coming back, it was probably the worst comeback of that one. As for the match for Chad Gable versus Bronson Reed, Chad was able to get an ankle lock on Bronson, but Bronson overpowered Chad, and then we see Maxxine Dupri come out, and Otis is there getting distracted. See, obviously, because Maxxine Dupri seems to be getting into Otis's head of becoming a male model. Reed gives Chad the tsunami finish for the win. Bronson Reed wins the match. Are Otis and Chad going to split up? Right now, it seems like the direction they're going for. Either way, whether they were to break up or not, Chad Gables has a lot going for him, too. I think he's come a long way. He's a great wrestler right now. I would say he's pretty over with the WWE fans and with his little slogans and whatever. He could actually go further than what he was when he first was a singles competitor. As for Otis, I mean, it's not the first time that a tag team that he's in breaks up with Tucker, Heavy Machinery. It's not the first time. But I feel like Otis is cursed, because every time he's in a tag team and he's on the right direction, they break him up and they kind of give Otis the short end of the straw. So now that short end is Otis becoming a model for Maxxine, male models. So it will make for good comedy, I think, because Otis is low-key funny. He's like, he has like that dry humor, the dark humor that's dry. So I mean, I'll give it a shot if Otis was to become a male model. Might as well just make fun of the whole thing. So then we move on to the main event of Monday Night Raw, which was Edge versus Austin Theory for the United States Championship. I'm calling it right now. I've been calling it for a long time. Austin Theory is the next big star. I've had people disagree with me. I've had people agree with me. But it's just written all over his face. Once Austin Theory is given the opportunity to shine and be something bigger, he's going to take it. And a lot of people are gonna be surprised of what Austin Theory can accomplish. Because obviously we know that, how can I put it, Triple H or people backstage have been eyeing Austin Theory as the new John Cena. That's yet to be seen, because obviously when John Cena came in, we didn't really expect him to be John Cena. So it should be interesting to see how far Austin Theory can go. I'm giving Austin maybe 2 or 3 years before we see him in a main event championship match. And with Edge being back, I just love seeing Edge. It's a feel-good moment for me. I love seeing him wrestle. I love hearing him do promos because he's probably one of the most underrated shit talkers ever, especially when he was the rated R superstar. I was super underrated when on the mic. I wish he could stay forever, but given the opportunity, you know, he can stay forever, but realistically, we know that won't happen. He has maybe a year or two left before he will actually need to retire. But I love Edge, and I hope he just keeps wrestling until whenever he's ready to actually retire the boots. As for the match, Edge grabs the crossface on Theory and sends him straight to the ropes. Edge spears Austin, and it looks like he's gonna win the belt, but we see Finn Balor comes out. Finn kicks Edge in the head, and Austin does an 8-count and retains the title. So Austin Theory retains the title. Okay, so let's say Austin Theory is going to go to WrestleMania as the United States champion. That's cool and everything, but this is where the kicker is. So after the match, Finn Balor gave Edge 3 coups de grace. We all know that this is obviously going to head into a Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania, which Hell in a Cell matches at WrestleMania are uncommon, but they're starting to become common, because now if this one happens, it would be the 5th one in history where Hell in a Cell happens, and I'm all up for it, as long as we don't see a gimmick for it, a weird gimmick. And by weird gimmick in a Hell in a Cell, I mean, we don't need the lights to go red. We don't need the lights to go down. We don't need neon lights. We don't even need to see Finn Balor like the demon. You know, I really hope that they don't do this whole, like, let's say Finn Balor announces a Hell in a Cell match, but not just any Hell in a Cell match, like a Judgment Day Hell in a Cell match. I think that would kill the buzz. We don't need a gimmick for it. All we need to see is two men that hate each other. They're gonna raise some hell inside the cell. They're gonna break tables, they're gonna break chairs, they're gonna whatever, maybe bleed, who knows, but that's it. It's gonna end right there. And I think Edge and Finn Balor could easily have one of the best matches of the night at WrestleMania if the pacing is good. Like I said, we don't need any gimmicks, anything. They can have Judgment Day come in and interfere. We can have Beth Phoenix come in and interfere and help Edge, and it will be Rhea. Oh no, wait, Rhea wouldn't be able to, because Rhea would have the championship match unless they were to do it on day 2. They'll make the Hell in a Cell, and then they make Charlotte and Rhea day 1. So Rhea will come out. That's the only way they can really do it. But yeah, we do not need any gimmick for this Hell in a Cell match. Just make it Edge versus Finn Balor, Hell in a Cell, WrestleMania 39. Boom, that's it. That's all we need in the card. Overall, for this episode of Monday Night Raw, I'm giving it maybe 8.5 out of 10. For some odd reason, the matches weren't great, but for me, they just weren't boring either. It just flowed. The pace was there. The promos and the segments were really the things that really kept the show really together. They didn't really do anything else, so I'm giving it 8.5. It really, really honestly wasn't really much of a bad show for me. The matches could have been better. They could have been better matches, but it is what it is. 8.5 out of 10. That will do it for this episode of Reed's Wrestling. Thank you for listening, and if you guys like what I'm doing, I will be recording more podcasts throughout the week. I took a little hiatus getting to deal with a little bit of personal stuff, but I am back, and I'm gonna try to do more podcasts. And I also started writing my blog about wrestling. Of course, I have lists, top 10 greatest WrestleMania matches, stuff like that. And I have, like, you know, what if segments where, like, what if this person does that to that person. I have a lot of writing, so if you want, you can read my blogs at medium.com/AlanRulesDude. That's medium.com/AlanRulesDood. AlanRulesDude. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.